The Sicha for Parshas Tazria is in the first volume, in the third volume of Likutei Sichos, Chelek Gimel. The Rebbe says that the mitzvah of Milah is that it should be performed, the circumcision should be performed on the eighth day after birth. As it says in Parshas Tazria, Uveyem Hashmini Yimel Besar Olosei. On the eighth day, you circumcise the flesh. If you do the circumcision after 8 days, so although you have fulfilled the mitzvah in general, and you make the bracha, but it would appear that it's missing this detail and this virtue of being on the eighth day. So mila bizmana, circumcision in its proper time, is lacking here. And having the circumcision and fulfilling the mitzvah, the mila, on the eighth day has a virtue of its own, a unique virtue, where we find that on Shabbos, if you're doing the circumcision on the eighth day from birth, then you do it even on Shabbos. Whereas if the circumcision had been delayed because of illness, the child was ill, then when you do perform the circumcision, it can't be performed on Shabbos, you have to wait until the next day. So this would seem to imply that when a child is not circumcised on the eighth day, even if it's for a legitimate reason, where the Torah says not to do it because the child is not well, so you then don't have that virtue of mila bizmana. So that when you do perform the circumcision, the circumcision has an effect on the future, that from now on he is circumcised. But until now, he was uncircumcised. And the circumcision can't retroactively give you the virtue of mila bizmana, of having been circumcised on the eighth day. That's the way it would appear. But the Rambam, in the laws of mila, the Rambam says that the reason that a child should be must be healthy before a circumcision can be performed is for two reasons. First of all, sakonis nefoshes deicha et hakol, the saving of a life, protecting a life, takes precedence over all else. So that if there's a danger to the child, even the great mitzvah of circumcision is delayed. And secondly, since it is possible, lomul achazman, since it is possible to perform the circumcision later, and you don't lose anything in doing that, and efsha lahachzir nefesh achas miyisrael olam, and you can never bring a person back once he has been killed from the illness and the circumcision. So the Rebbe says that this seems to imply that the two reasons that the Rambam brings, the first reason is that protecting life takes precedence. That seems to say that if you do the circumcision later, it is not as good as if you did it on time, and it doesn't retroactively correct that time in which the child was not circumcised, but it is worth sacrificing that virtue in order to protect the life. But when the Rambam gives you a second reason, the second reason for not performing the circumcision on this eighth day when the child is ill is because you can always perform it later. Well, that seems to be saying that there is no loss. You lose nothing in performing the circumcision later, and that would imply that when you do perform the circumcision after the eighth day, it retroactively goes back to the eighth day, and it's as if the child had been circumcised from the eighth day and on. So we need to understand, how does this work? How can it be that the circumcision should have an effect retroactively? We know, for example, there are things in Torah that have a retroactive effect. But that's usually where the circumstances, the conditions that are necessary, are all there. And it's just a matter of time before they can be put into place. So when they are put into place, they have a retroactive effect because they had existed all along. They were just waiting to be activated. So it was only the activation that was missing, not the essential ingredients. Or sometimes an act can be done on a condition that we have a certain reality now, and this reality is dependent on a condition that will be met in the future, so that when that condition is met, the reality already pre-existed, and the condition now activates that reality retroactively. But in the case of the milah, you have to introduce something that doesn't exist yet. And that happens after the eighth day. So how can this new event retroactively affect the days that preceded it? You also need to understand, why does the Rambam end with the words, you can't bring a soul back after it has died? That seems to go back to the first reason of Pikuach Nefesh, and is not connected with what we're saying, that the circumcision after the eighth day is retroactively effective. So what does the Rambam mean by you can't bring a soul back? It says in Lekut HaTorah that through the mitzvah of Milah, we bring a condition of godliness, a level of godliness, into the world, into the person, that human effort could never reach. It is such a high godliness that human effort could not reach there. So the godliness comes by itself. It is given from above. Only as long as the child is uncircumcised, that godliness can't connect to the person. So by removing the obstacle, by having the circumcision, you are permitting the godliness that comes from above to connect to the body and to the world. So it's merely the removal of an obstacle, it's not the creation of a new condition. And the same is true also concerning the soul. That part of the neshama that is brought into the body as a result of the circumcision is the part of the neshama that we cannot reach on our own. So the godliness of the neshama that comes as a result of milah is also a godliness that is given from above. It is the part of the neshama that we cannot control and that we cannot draw to ourselves. But it comes of itself, only it's blocked by the lack of circumcision. So when the child is circumcised, that part of the neshama then settles of its own into the body because the obstacle has been removed. The obstruction, the unholiness of the uncircumcised child has been removed. And so the circumcision is merely revealing that which pre-existed. The same is true also with tshuva. When we say that tshuva me'ava, if you do tshuva out of love, it has a retroactive effect. And that's because tshuva also does not produce anything new. In fact, the word tshuva means to return to a previous godly condition. And that is because even while a person is sinning, that part of the neshama that the tshuva comes from was always loyal to God and never participated in the sin. Only during the sin, that part of the neshama was hidden. And through the tshuva, it is revealed. And so again, it has an effect retroactively because the neshama was there before. It simply needed to be revealed. So once the obstruction is removed, and that is the sinfulness, then the part of the neshama that has been waiting to express itself is now free to have that expression. So if the Jew does not perform the circumcision, even though that part of the neshama is already there, or if a Jew doesn't do tshuva, that part of the neshama, the innocence of the neshama, is still there, but the point of creation is that that which exists in the neshama should come out and be revealed in the body. So the circumcision is necessary, and the tshuva is necessary to bring out this reality, the pre-existent godliness, but to reveal it in the level and the state of the body. And then it has a retroactive effect. Now we'll understand what the Rambam says, that e'efsher lahachzir nefesh achas miYisrael le'olam. It is impossible to bring back a Jewish soul forever. With these words, the Rambam is giving an additional explanation, or he's hinting at an additional explanation as to why it is that the milah can have a retroactive effect. What the Rambam is saying is that the connection between a Jew and God is higher than all considerations. The bond that exists is always there and cannot be damaged, regardless of the condition in which the Jew may find himself. As it says, Bein kach ubein kach bonayim, God says, whether it's true that the Jews worship idols or it's not true, either way, they are my children. And to exchange them for another nation, God forbid, is impossible. So no matter what the condition that the Jew finds himself in, the bond with God always remains whole. In a footnote, the Rebbe says that there's the famous Rambam, or Halacha, that says that if the Beis Din has to convince a Jew to give a get, to divorce his wife, when the Halacha calls for a divorce, and the husband refuses, then the court forces him by whipping him until he says, I'm willing to give. Because the husband has to give the get willingly. So they whip him until he says, I want. And the Rambam explains, how does this make it a voluntary act? It's because his neshama really does want. Because the neshama of a Jew wants to do whatever it is that halacha demands. And since the halacha demands it, his neshama wants to do it. And that's why, if he is forced to give a divorce, not by a Jewish court, but by malicious non-Jews, for example, then the get that he gives is not valid because it was not a voluntary one, even though he said that he is willing to give it. But when the court, when the Beis Din forces him, then it's because the halacha demands it. And if the halacha demands it, then his neshama wants to do it. So the question is, knowing that his neshama wants to give the divorce because that's what halacha expects or demands, why do you have to whip him until he says, I want? Why don't you just make the get? Have him sign it without his saying, I want, I'm willing. Because we know that his neshama is willing. So we see from this that what is true of the neshama needs to be revealed through the body. He has to be megalit into the world. He has to say what his neshama feels. And that's the purpose of having him say, I am willing. So this bond that exists between the Jew and God, which is indestructible, is what the Rambam is hinting at when he says that it's impossible to bring back the soul of a Jew forever. What he means to say is that it's impossible to take back the bond that is created between a Jew and God. That can't be destroyed, because not only is the bond between God and the Jewish people as a people, but with each individual Jew. The Eibishter bonds with each Jew with the type of a bond that could never be taken back, cannot be withdrawn. Every Jew individually, God loves with an essential love, as the Baal Shem Tov said, that every Jew is precious to God like an only child born to parents in their later years. That's how precious a Jew is to God, and in fact, more precious than that. So the purpose of creation, that God created the world, is Bishru Yisroel Shenikrizeshes. When we say that God created the world for the Jewish people, it doesn't mean the Jewish people as a whole, but it means each individual Jew. That the entire kavana, the entire motivation for creation, is focused on and depends on each individual Jew. And that's why every individual should say, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world was created because of me. And that's also why, if you save the life of a single Jew, it's as if you've kept the entire world in existence. Because if there were one Jew missing, if there was one Jew lost from the Jewish people, then the entire creation would be upset, would be lacking. And so the Rambam says, since you cannot take back the soul of a single Jew forever, you can't take back the bond, the commitment that God makes to each individual Jew, and at all times that bond or that connection is there and it is effective, it needs only to be revealed. That's why it is possible for circumcision to have a retroactive effect. Because even if the circumcision takes place later, after the eighth day, it affects the past as well, because it needed only the connection to God that always exists, even before the circumcision, needed only to be revealed and to be brought into the physical, into the state of revelation. And that's what is accomplished when you remove the obstacle. We've spoken many times before that the mitzvah of milah suggests and carries within it all other mitzvahs, all forms of avodah. So the lesson from this in avodas Hashem is as follows. On the one hand, a Jew must know that it is up to him, it is up to his effort and up to his work, it depends on his work, to bring godliness into the world. One cannot go to sleep and claim that since in essence, on the level of the neshama, everything is fine, and he is connected to God with a bond that is endless and that can never be severed, le'yidach mimenu nidach, and therefore it is really not important, or is not crucial, how he is going to behave and what he is going to do, since in essence all the goodness is already there. Why can't he say that? Because the bond with God must be brought out and must be revealed, and that revelation, bringing the godliness to the surface, this has to come through human effort, and therefore there has to be the actual performance of the mitzvah, the actual circumcision. And that is to bring what is hidden into a state of revelation. Like the blood of the circumcision that is brought out into the surface. On the other hand, we also need to know, without a shadow of a doubt, that which we do accomplish through our efforts, umaltem es orlos levavchem, this comes as a gift from above. And it is far greater, it is a far greater result than is justified by the efforts of our avodah. And yet, through our Aveda, through our efforts of removing the uncircumcised heart, so that the heart becomes sensitive and responsive, when we do that, we are given from above, we are Zeicha, that the godliness of Umol Hashem Elikecha Es Levavcha, that God promises that He will circumcise our hearts, a much greater revelation from above comes as a result of our efforts. In volume 1 of Likutei Sichos, on Parshas Tazria, the Rebbe quotes Likutei Torah, where it says that on the opening verses of Parshas Tazria, it says, Isha ki Tazria, that if a woman's seed is dominant, then she gives birth to a boy. And if the husband's seed is dominant, then the child will be a girl. So he says in Likutei Torah that on a spiritual level, the man and the woman refers to God and the Jews. God is the man, and the women are the Jews, and the Jews are the woman. So if the inspiration, the initiative, comes from God, from the man, then the result will be a girl. And if the initiative comes from below, from the Jew reaching up to God, then the result will be a boy. So the Rebbe explains that the difference is that if the godliness comes from above, then it is a much greater godliness than we can stimulate from below. But that godliness produces a girl, which means a godliness that is given from above. Whereas when the inspiration, the initiative, comes from below, from the woman, from us, it's not as great a light, it's not as great a godliness, because we can't reach as high, but whatever godliness we do get, it is a boy, meaning to say godliness acquired through our own efforts. And this distinction, this difference between bringing down from above or raising up from below, this is also the difference between the 2 months, Nisan and Tishrei. That on the one hand, Nisan is a month in which God comes from above and is drawn down into the world, as in the miracles of Pesach. And Tishrei is a time when the Jew has to raise himself through tshuva to connect to God. And so the Gemara says, the Medrash says that when God chose His world, He established the beginning of the year in Tishrei. And when God chose the children of Yaakov, the Jewish people, He established a Rosh Hashanah for them in Nisan. So in the Sefer Akedah and in other Svarim, they bring an explanation as to why the 2 months are so different. In the conduct, God's conduct, when he relates to the world, there are two manners, there are two types. There's the natural conduct and there's the miraculous conduct. Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah for natural behavior, for natural conduct. Because on the first day of Tishrei, man was created, and that was the conclusion of creation of nature. But Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for the miraculous behavior above nature, because in Nisan you had all the miracles that were completely beyond nature, the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. To understand this more deeply, in Tishrei, the attribute of Gevura is dominant. Tshuva, rising from below upwards. And since the creation, in their the creatures, the human beings, in their Aveda, as great as they may be, is in the end, in the final analysis, still finite and limited. Therefore, the month of Tishrei is a time of nature, where the conduct is within the laws of nature, since it depends on the human being's initiative. But Nisan is a time of chesed. Chesed means a drawing down from above, and what comes down is above, beyond, greater than the world, and therefore it becomes a miraculous chesed, produces miraculous treatment, miraculous behavior, above nature. And that's also why in the month of Tishrei we ask for rain, and in the month of Nisan we ask for dew. Because the difference between rain and dew is that the dew comes from above, independent of what's happening on earth. Whereas rain is produced by the earth. The heat that rises from the earth produces rain. And that's also why rain can sometimes be withheld. You can be lacking rain, drought, but dew is never withheld. Since rain comes as a result of human effort, as a result of earth's effort, it is possible that the human being fails in his effort, and therefore there's no rain. But the dew that comes from above, independent of our efforts, therefore it is never withheld. Concerning the coming of Mashiach, we find an argument in the Gemara between Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yeshua, whether it will happen in the month of Nisan or it will happen in the month of Tishrei. So we need to understand, since the Yetzias Mitzrayim happened in Nisan, and the coming out of this Golos is similar to the Geula from Mitzrayim, why should this Geula come in Tishrei and not in Nisan? So we have to understand that the difference between the two opinions is whether the Geula comes as a result of tshuva, or whether it comes as an initiative from above. As we said before, that when the initiative comes from below, it is not as great a godliness, but on the other hand, it is absorbed and contained in a pnimius. And that's why there's the opinion that the Geula has to come in Tishrei. And that's because even though Tishrei is a time when it's dependent on the work, on the Aveda of a human being, but that has the advantage of being permanent, absorbed into creation. Yetzias Mitzrayim happened before the giving of the Torah. And all the Jews were at that time sunk into the 49 levels of Tumah. And therefore the Geula from Mitzrayim had to come from above. It couldn't be from below, it couldn't be from the people. And so it happened in Nisan. But the Geula with Mashiach comes after thousands of years of the Aveda of Jews, after Matan Torah, and through the mitzvahs we have made the world much clearer, much holier, so that the world is receptive, is a keli to godliness, which is what Matan Torah accomplished, that the highest godly things can come down into the world and be absorbed into the world. And so it is with the coming of Mashiach. Although Mashiach is much higher than the world, and the Gili is a much greater Gili, much greater revelation, but we are now capable of absorbing it inwardly, internally, and becoming merged with it. And that's why Rabbi Elezer says that the Geula HaAmitis VaHashleima will come in Tishrei, it will come in a pnimius. But Rabbi Yeshua says that and the halacha is, as Rabbi Yeshua, that it will be in Nisan, because we can have a combination of both. It can be from above, initiated by God from above, the highest form of revelation, and at the same time absorbed in a pnimius.